Welcome back to another episode of Atomic Zero. Tonight, I have a special guest here, Jay Jasper Pugao. Thank you for coming on the show. You know, you're a man of many myths. I've been trying to get a hold of you for quite some time. And I know it's been busy because you've been working on a lot of projects. You're not only a martial artist, you're a teacher, you're a lover, you're an educator. I didn't know. Do you dance too?
Back in the 90s was the time. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate you reaching out and getting me on here. Really thankful for you and, creating a platform for our stories and our narratives to be told. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you. It's been funny because it's like I started doing the show a while back and, you know, it's always been constantly watching everybody evolve and seeing how they've come to and what they've been, you know, finding ways during COVID. Shit's been hitting the fan since the big fires going around here in the Bay. I mean, you're doing pretty okay with all the fires and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's been a little tough, you know, because especially under the situations we're already going through with the shelter in place and the COVID, and then now we got these fires. So it's really been a challenge for folks, you know, mentally and physically, obviously. But I personally am just kind of grateful that, you know, I have a home and I gotta even have an air filter. Some people don't even have that. So overall, just kind of, it's stressful, but thankful that it's not, it could be worse, you know.
How did the COVID hit you guys, like, as in, you know, do you remember what you were doing right before all this kind of went down, or just kind of like, oh man, we're just indoors?
I was like, definitely, we were all living, you know, the regular quote life, right? The normal, what we perceived as normal, which honestly it's not really even sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's got all exposed because of this pandemic that, you know, like, shoot, you know, like the way we've been living our life is like, maybe we don't need to be so, wasteful in the way we kind of like, live, right? And mm-hmm. including like driving so much everywhere to where now the shelter in place got us, we had to pivot to being virtual, you know, and unfortunately there's a lot of jobs that's lost and a lot of anxiety because of that, because not a lot of people are used to that. But, you know, overall, just like trying to learn how to pivot and adapt, and now that I'm like in it, you know, just trying to find ways of trying to do it better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been interesting. Like a lot of people have taken up like a lot of different forms of minimalism, you know, by like producing less waste. So that's funny how you say that, because I think that I've had a few friends that, you know, like living here in the Bay have mentioned about how they've kind of stripped away because they're not trying to create as much. Because it's I guess there's just a lot of trash everywhere we go, right?
Yeah, it's just we just, you know, we do too much as humans. Mm-hmm. We pollute, we use, and we waste stuff, and, you know, not that it's not happening now, it's still happening, but it's just kind of we minimize it, especially here in the U.S. where we're like, you know, we're leading that kind of lifestyle, like that throwaway lifestyle. So now it's like, you know, even though it's been crazy with the shelter in place, traffic isn't as bad. You know, we're not producing as much carbon on the planet, hopefully. I think that's what I'm gathering from the data. You know, it's better on the environment, but it's also challenging for humans being locked down and not used to that same kind of normalcy, you know?
Yeah, no, as I was saying before, it's funny how you would go out and see your friends regularly, and all of a sudden you're like, okay guys, I'm gonna see you on the computer every night, we'll play on video games, but yeah, don't come over to my house, don't come over. I don't know, and it's funny because I started watching some videos of you guys, like any type of drills, it's always very human to human contact doing martial arts, right?
Yeah, for sure.
How long of shelter in place before you decided to venture back out and wearing the mask? And coming back into the community? It was a minute.
You know, I didn't hop out right. Well, like right now, I'm still teaching my. I'm actually, you know, teaching my martial arts class online, so I'm actually have pivoted and done that, and it's beneficial because now my students that lives in Switzerland or Barcelona can actually access and train with me. But in terms of me, like socially being out, it was a while. It took a while, you know, because again, part of it is like when you're living with people or you have family, then there's all these other kind of agreements and talks that have to happen, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like seeing your friend, like you can come over and pull up in front of the garage, but that's it. We could just talk from far away.
Yeah. I mean, that's really it. Or like, you know, if you're like that person that's used to always being out and about, you know, then it's like, it's cool when you're like a bachelor by yourself, but when you're like interacting with people and there's elders in your home and your family, then you're like, damn it. I guess I won't be, you know, even though you might have the access, you might have the freedom to, you know, be like, ah, shit. All right, man, I'll give you a call, you know, like, oh, let's do a Zoom call. But yeah, but after a while, man, actually, I've been out and just trying to be responsible with my mask and, you know, I'm just trying to, I've just realized that it's nothing more healing, right, really during these times than being out in nature. So I just feel like, you know, as much as possible, I try to get out and be out there, even if it's just, you know, going for a walk or anything or something like that.
So, I mean, like, while you were at home, you were just practicing at home, training at home?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching outside before the pandemic hit. And, you know, training at friends, other fellow martial arts school owners school. So I was doing that. They were allowing, you know, they were welcoming me and then, you know, gaining momentum. And then when this happened, even those friends of mine who were on those schools are struggling, you know, and a few of them actually had to close their schools, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been really hard on the martial arts community as a whole, you know, and fitness folks as a whole industry. But for sure, for the martial arts community, that little niche. And, you know, so it's been really challenging. But luckily, we've been, you know, like, you know, for example, in our system, martial arts system, we have this pendulum ball that we train with. And it's actually started by our master. And I was just like, hey, I'll just base a class out of this. And I've been having my students have been consistent, you know, and I even have partners that train that I'm either training as because they're partnered, they're quarantined together, or I have like a pair of brothers. There's these teenagers, Maxwell and Mateo, that like, they're both have these pendulum balls at their house training. So it's really been really useful, you know, for that part. And because people get to train, there's like, we get to build a community. And even though that these are like inanimate objects hanging from the middle of their house, you know, we get to train together. So it's been amazing. I don't know if you get to see any of their videos that I've had with them, but it's really been good with them. For them, it's really been beneficial. Yeah.
Now, who is your instructor? Was Sunny? When you started?
Sunny Upad.
Say that one more time.
My master, Sunny Umpad passed away, I believe, in 2007. Yeah, and he was our teacher that, and he was kind of on the underground. He didn't like the limelight so much. He didn't have a commercial school teaching out of his own house. However, you know, like the diehard underground martial arts community knew about him well, particularly. You know, Jesse Glover, which is one of Bruce Lee's three students, met him and I was like, yo, you're amazing. And you're going to go and do tours and seminars with me. So he took him on seminars in Europe with him. And that's kind of Sunny blew up that way. You know, Jesse Glover has been quoted in many documentations that he said Sunny would move just like Bruce Lee, but with weapons in his hands. And so, yeah, that's how he kind of blew up. But still, he didn't really blow up, you know, like I think Jesse was like, yo, if he's lived longer, he he would have got bigger. I mean, he would have got as big as Bruce, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but he passed away.
Now, how did you get involved, and how did you come to martial arts as your entry into martial arts world?
Yeah, aside from like, you know, I remember vivid memories when I was younger in the Philippines, but nothing official, right? Mm-hmm. Like my grandfather, who was like into boxing, you know, but I didn't really took a class, so he didn't have a gym, you know. I was just like learning a little bit from him. And we would just watch boxing together. That was super young. But I didn't really get involved. And I think, I don't know if Greg told this story, but, you know, we actually met Mario when we were both, me and Greg and my brother even, mm-hmm. and some of our close friends. They were all like teenagers. We were all working at the bagel shop. Right?
Mm.
And I was like one of the managers. And like, man, we were not working, right? We were like eating the bagels, giving away shit to our friends. And we were over there right there at Berkeley competing with Noah's. Noah's Bagels is like the master of the bagel block, right? And here we are at a small bagel shop with these teens running that shit. And very chaotic, mindful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember vividly, like, Greg was out there, you know, because he wasn't behind the fucking counter.
No, we're
So he's like right there and... So this Filipino cat walked in front of him, and Greg was wearing his Filipino shirt, and I was like right in the back behind him. And he was like, "Oh, Filipino, huh? You guys know Filipino martial arts?" And we're like, "What?" You know, and Greg been taking like other martial arts before that, and so mm-hmm. did I. And we were like, "There's Filipino martial arts, you know?" And then said, so, "Yeah, I go teach you guys." And he was like, we found out this guy was a homeless Filipino cat, and then in turn of the learned lessons that we got from him, he would like ask for bagels, or he would ask for, sometimes we'll buy him some food, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy was like kind of like opened our mind into this world of martial arts, and we thought this was shit.
Mm-hmm.
We started doing our own research until we found out that he had a master, he had someone else that mm-hmm. was teaching him. So he was like, "What?" And he was like, "What? We thought this was it, but now there's someone else, you know?" And then he eventually introduced us to Sonny, right? Mm. We went over there and you know, it was very like, the door opens up and it creaks, and it was like nothing but darkness back there.
And it's all ominous. Smokes.
Yeah, ominous, and he smokes cigarettes, and all you see is the smoke coming out the door. And he's like, "Mario,
classic.
What's up, Mario? What are you up to?" Right? It's like, "Hey, I just want to introduce you to these guys. I've been training them." You know, later we find out that Mario actually had a very challenging upbringing and challenging mm-hmm. lifestyle, which is why he was homeless and he was in and out of trouble,
mm-hmm.
you know. And later I found out that he was actually, there would be a period that he'd be banned from seeing the master because he needed to go clean up his act, mm. you know? So we were kind of his token of showing the master, like he's getting his life together. Like, mm. "Oh, I got these two Filipino guys." Cause there's been a moment that he'll disappear for a few months or a few weeks. Like, "Where's Mario?" And all of a sudden we'll hear about him teaching some other, you know, kids that are like kicking cans and kicking, you know, being destructive, mm-hmm. you know, like, and, you know, getting around with these group of folks that are like, not a positive influence in his
yeah,
life, right?
They're trying to turn their life around.
Right. So later, you know, he brings us on board, and then later on, he falls off again. Right. And,
mm-hmm.
and we're like, "Damn, we where's Mario?" So that's when me and Greg finally decide, like, "All right, we're going to go see Sonny on our own."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we were like kind of scared a little bit because we were like, here we are trying to go see the master without the, you know, trying to see Yoda without.
With all the invitations and whatnot. I feel right. like I'm barging in. Right.
Right. And mm-hmm. we were like, "Yeah, I don't want this fool throwing a spear through the window and shit," you know. And then later on, we find out, like, "Oh, okay, you know, we go, and he's like, so what's up? He's like, where's Mario at? He's like, I don't know. We haven't seen him. We're wondering if you've seen him. You know, if we found out that he got in trouble again or he was going through some trouble. So that's when Sonny was like, all right, I'll take you guys under my wing. You know, and but I'll see you guys only once a week on a Sunday between this time and this time. And, you know, me and Greg was like straight up younger folks, and I don't remember paying him, you know. So this was like my way of paying back, was like continuing the art, teaching the kids that I interacted with, teaching the culture, you know. That was like my way of paying him. Because after I met him, after the Sunday sessions, he eventually brought this in on his regular classes, you know. And that's when it was like we got to see all of these like highly decorated martial artists that were like from other parts of the world that's coming to fly to see Sonny. You know, we didn't even know this shit. We just thinking like he's just this hermit, like fucking like Yoda in his cave. We didn't know that there was all these.
I feel like our generation, like back in the, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, like there were the last of them, the hermits.
Yeah, right. It's like
All the greats, they were all hermits at that point, because it wasn't like there was social media to make you famous.
Yeah, no, and there's a few of them that actually didn't like the limelight, you know, that even if there was social media, they probably wouldn't even have it, because they're like so into this, you know. And it shows too, because obviously he was highly sought out and he contributed a lot to the system. And it shows when you're like so deeply ingrained in it that, you know, you wipe a lot of other things in your life to focus on one thing, you know. So yeah. And so from there, we just kind of got brought in, and and then me and Greg just kind of grows up in this circle of other groups of martial artists. Go ahead.
So you guys were working at the bagel shop, and then you guys together started on your Sundays. You guys would go train with Sonny ultimately, and that's kind of what started your brotherlyhood bond right there, right?
Yeah. Well, aside from that, you know, like I said, if you know my brother, which is actually JR, also from the business community.
What up, JR?
Yeah, shout out to my brother. But him and JR and Greg are actually best friends. They actually went to Oakland High together. And that's how I met Greg. He was always like the skater, other Pinoy kid that my brother knew in Oakland. You know, there's only a few Filipinos in Oakland. Most of our friends are like Latinos and Black and everybody else. So when there's the Filipinos, you know all the Filipino kids. So he was like, became my other little brother, right? And then the martial arts became another branch of our relationship, me and Greg's relationship, you know. So then we go and start training, and then we start teaching, you know. Well, I kind of have been surrounded in the educational environment, so it's just one of the other things that I kind of brought into my tool belt as something that I decided to also teach, you know.
And when did you when did you get into teaching? Because I mean, I know you won an award back in the day.
that teaching was more for, I've been acknowledged around for in the school districts, you know, but in terms of
as an educator,
yeah, but in terms of martial arts teaching, I would say like after like maybe 7-8 years after learning from Sonny, you know, then I was like around youth, and I would just felt like it was really valuable for the young people that I was working with, you know, particularly in East Oakland. I was working around a lot of Latino and African American kids who were like from very challenged urban communities, you know. And you know, it's either sports or video games, or those are their only things, right? So I made an offering as one of these after school program to do martial arts, you know, and they fucking ate it up, you know. They were like, oh, they loved it, you know, like made it not too competitive, but fun. You know, I integrated some of the things that I've learned from Sunny, integrated some of the things I learned as an educator with young people, and just kind of combined it and made it and introduced it to them, you know, and they were like freaking amazing at it. And one thing about kids, they're like, you know, they love it when if it's kind of engaging them physically and there's some storytelling behind it. So I like integrated some of the storytelling about Filipino culture, you know, they was interested in that. And to tie it into the story of about resistance, you know, and then they like that because, you know, as brown and black kids, they kind of understood that, you know, like their elders and their ancestors had resistance, you know, that like, that they had some kind of, you know, so they were like, oh, okay. And the discipline aspect was a big help, you know, because then they were like, oh, okay, I can like focus on discipline and it wouldn't be so nerdy, you know, or so like hippie or nerdy, you know. It was like, oh, martial arts, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to geek out too much to tell everybody what we're doing, right?
Yeah. So, you know, just kind of make it hip. And yeah, and then, you know, them, you know, kids with weapons, that's fun, you know.
I know that's a great line to say, kids with weapons, that's fun.
Yeah.
That is.
It's really about dialing it back, you know. And I think part of the struggle that I've had, like when I like started working with like elementary kids and particularly kids in the hood, like it was freaking wild, bro. And then so what, but I show them a video of me doing martial arts and their eyes would pop open. And then they're like, oh, we want to learn that shit. And then I was like, oh, I don't know, I want to teach this kid with a weapon because he's fucking wild. He might hurt somebody. Then I started like tricking them. And I'm like, okay, I'm down to teach this. This is a really dangerous art form, but you got to be kind of mature to do this.
Yeah, you have to take on that responsibility.
Yeah, oh, that was like the carrot, you know? Mm-hmm. And once they down with that, then my wildest kid who had had the most challenge with became my strongest ally, you know? Mm-hmm. Then he would be like, oh, shit, oh, cool. I'm like, yo, those kids need to be quiet. Do it in a way that's nice. Then he'll be like, go there with walking with a stick, acting like he's the fucking security guard, right? Like, but doing it in a nice way, you know? Then I'm like, then the parents was like, oh, bring more of that shit, you know?
Yeah, we need more law and order around here. A little bit more order, just a lot.
Orderly. Yeah. As long as I didn't hear about whipping each other with the sticks at home, then, you know, then I'd be cool with it.
So, well, it's not out of intimidation of any sorts. It's just understanding, I think, what martial arts and philosophy kind of gives you, as in, you know, living with reasonable order, contentment, and, you know, and knowing this idea that you're here to help people, not harm anybody. But that's another story. You're not trying to beat anybody with a stick, but I'm like, hey, I'm just walking over there. I have a stick in my hand. Just so happens I have a stick in my hand. I'm not trying to hit you guys. I'm just saying, could you guys quiet down, please? I'm not going to hit you with the stick, I swear.
Yeah, there's something about younger people in general, but they got the strongest moral compass. You know, it's like if you remind them that well, they're doing something for good and they're part of that, they're usually down for it, you know?
I think so, because I think, well, my belief is if you give them a chance to hope, you know, for a child, I'm not saying adults, because adults are different. You're all evil. You're all evil, or at least you figured out how to be and what, you know, it's like, you know, you can be as evil as you want as long as you can prove it. But for a child, you know, generally I would say, it's not to say they're gullible or anything, but you know, there's still this idea of like choosing to be good. You know, that idea of, as long as they've been taught that idea of choosing to be good or choosing to do the right thing, I think that instilling that gives a child good growth, I believe.
Yeah, totally. Great reminder.
So with you and martial arts, you know, well, do you remember your first time when you first like, okay, I got a knife now. They let me use a knife.
Oh, man.
You know, I upgraded from stick to knife now.
Yeah, no, I got.
You remember your first time?
Story about that.
Oh yes.
I mean, there was well, you know, one of the things that made Sonny also very ahead of his time is the way he documents, right? Like everybody else, you know, you come to class and there's all these different things you do. Where Sonny would always say, before you come to class, you bring two VHS tapes, right? So he would always have a camera up, you know. So you will find videos Greg or I will post of Sonny doing flows back in the frigging 90s and these old VHS cameras, you know. But they,
I miss
this
those.
Is how we would,
I miss those.
Yeah. You know, this is how we would learn, man. And then you would come to class and you would spend 2 hours and you would train for an hour and a half. And then the second half hour, we'll be sitting down having discussions. And then he will be making a dub, a copy of one VHS tape to the next one. And then you get to go home with that shit. And then that becomes, you go do your homework. And then you come back to the weekend, the following week to class, and Sonny would be able to tell if you didn't practice or not. Right? Based on your movements. And then there would be times where I would come back and I'm like, you know, didn't practice. I didn't even watch the video. I was just happy to be there. You know, did my shit. I was like young, so I didn't really, wasn't really invested, you know, getting in trouble. And I'd come to class and be like, you know, and then he was like, oh, you're not practicing, you didn't practice. I'm like, oh shit, how does he know? Right? And then I realized, you know, because I remember I mentioned to you that it was just Sundays, and then sometimes those Sundays he would have special guests. And so he would have other students come on Sunday, especially people fly from different parts of the world. And then he would send us to the living room while he and all of the, you know, the masters will be in the backyard, right? And then they'll be, I would be like, damn, when will we ever be invited to be in these ones, you know? Like, ooh, look at what they're doing. Like, ooh, right? And then until I realized that I actually started watching the videos, right? So I watched the videos and watched the videos, and I'm fast forwarding because the majority of the time I noticed that we're fucking around, right? We're talking, we're laughing, which is fun because actually later on, Sonny, you know, part of the story I hear about Sonny, about him evolving, one of it was like he liked, as the later years of his evolution, he became more not as dark, not as into like the dark part of the martial art, but more playful, insightful, you know, experimental. And part of that, you know, was from what I heard was this youthful vibe that me and Greg brought because we were the younger persons. Everybody else was these masters and grandmasters, you know, but we were like these limber young Filipino cats that can do the moves that he wanted us to do, that a lot of his first generation, second generation, big, tall American, or, you know, that they were having a challenging to do these certain movements. So anyway, going back to what we were doing, I'm watching like, when is he going to advance us? Why are we just holding the sticks for so goddamn long? And so I'm watching the video and we're just fucking around, playing, laughing. And then he will come in, you will see him come in the video and he'll see him and look at us. And then he'll look and then you see him shake his head as if like, these motherfuckers are not ready. And then he'll leave the room again. And I'm like, then I will rewind. And he was like, he came in, shook his head and left. So then I would realize, oh, okay, we got to tighten up. So I started watching the videos and then, you know, and then not laughing as hard as much and really being engaging as a student when he would come, right? And then from there, I realized we accelerated. And all of a sudden, I would say a year and a half later, we were brought into the regular group. All of a sudden, we were holding the sticks and then we were holding the swords. And it was just like, all of a sudden, it seemed like it was overnight. Like, wait a minute, I'm holding the swords.
We're doing demos now and we're actually working with everybody else with these things.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we're like, you know, we're part of the group. Just having the discussions around demonstrations and stuff like that, you know? Yeah. And then we were younger, so it was like being younger and Filipino, because a lot of the folks in the cohort were like other decorated martial artists, but they were non-Filipino, right? So when there was like a Filipino festival or this thing happened, like I would bring it up because me and Greg is in the Bindo Civ community. We're kind of performers at the same time. So we kind of use the martial arts and integrated it into our performance arts, you know? So that's kind of how we kind of took the martial arts. So then that's like what we brought in the Filipino martial arts, in the Filipino arts community. You know, we were like, you know, even though like we also got into theater, you know, and Greg got into dance.
You were saying a second ago about, you know, the knife. I remember when I first got to hold my first sword, or, you know, that first katana or that first thing. It's always so weird because you pick it up and you're like, this is a little heavier than I thought it was. And it's not like, it doesn't feel like, you know, you pick up a weapon, you're like, this is like Excalibur. It's perfectly balanced in my hand. It's like a feather. And you're like, no, wait, this is like, it's a little awkward. It's heavy. And I'm like, and you start swinging things. You're like, I don't know exactly where the tip is yet.
Yeah.
Right. It's every little weapon you pick up, it's always interesting because there's a little special feel to it because you're looking for the balance. But once you find the balance, now you're just trying to find where your tips are so that you know how you can gouge, slash, you know, dice.
Right.
Filet.
Filet, I like that. No, I'm definitely, yeah, that's definitely one of the first like moments where you're like, oh, I get to hold one. You know, I've had a few swords before that I bought, but to actually, even it wasn't a real one, to grab a trainer blade in the martial arts school to me was like, oh, I leveled up.
Yeah.
Even though it was a trainer blade, you know.
No more wooden sword.
It's like, oh, like, look at this. Like, it was like the master actually trusted me to hold the sword and trusted in me to hold the sword, even though the sword is a trainer sword, right? It's not even real. It's not even a sharp one. But he actually felt I was ready to hold the sword. And it wasn't like any kind of official blessing where, get on one knee, I shall now anoint you as a bearer of this lineage and this
and
sword.
You're going to pour some tea involved.
Right. I'm going to put some candle wax on each shoulder, right? It wasn't like, at all like that. Like, here, Jay, try this. And it was
candle wax on the shoulders. Wow. That, sorry, I just thought about that. I was like, oh, man, I was like, wait. Am I wearing my shirt or am I not wearing a shirt for this?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what? Oh, I'm shirtless.
It's like, I'm wearing a tank top. Is that okay? You know, it just splackles a little bit.
I didn't know about this Filipino cultural practice.
I don't know of this practice, so I'm just learning about it now.
Yeah. So it's just been fun to be able to level up, and you know, then I was like, then it was easier to say, oh, now I could go buy a sword, or I could go buy a knife and not feel like, oh, I just bought a knife, but like, oh, I've been imparted to, it's okay to buy one of these things. So let me just grab one.
Were you ever fascinated with the butterfly knives? You know, like the little flippy flips and.
Yeah, always. It's you know, even my dad, my brothers would always show me play with it, you know. It's and even Sonny would have do some, I think they made a book about it, you know. It's just right now it's just not in my you know, it's maybe later I'll want to come back to it. Right now, you know, I feel like it's like a flipper or a yo-yo. Like, it's cool to play with. It's cute. It's cute to showcase, you know? Right now, I'm at the place where I'm like, I want to show my entire movement as the butterfly knife, you know? You know, anyone could learn the butterfly knife and its fancy moves, but, you know.
I won't hit on right people now, with that knife, but I always thought it was very flashy just because it's a very spectacle knife.
Oh, it's cute, man. And this history is beautiful, you know. It's like it's like strictly Filipino, you know. It's like, you know, it's great, you know. And it's like even the essence of it, now that I think about it, it's like is beautiful and deadly. It's nothing more Filipino than that. Mm-hmm. And flashy, you know, like, oh, okay, you Filipino.
Well, you get lost staring at it for a second, then he stabs you.
Yeah, oh, man.
Or her, because, you know, girls have picked it up recently, and oh, I think it's very sexy. Very sexy.
Yeah, oh, shit. Yeah. If someone pulled that shit out, when they start doing that fancy stuff, I'm usually running by that
time. I was like, she's been practicing. I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm out of here. See ya. You know?
Where have you been training at lately now? During the since you're back up doing these videos, are you training out more in Oakland or?
Yeah, just in Oakland, man. I'm honestly shooting right now out of my studio. You know, I got my Zoom camera and I'm doing my virtual classes that way. However, I am training in person with Greg. You know, we're lightweight kind of quarantined together. Mm-hmm. But I am opening it up for my students to do an in-person training, of course, with all of the practicing all our protocols with, you know, distancing. But right now, everything is just straight up out of Oakland. And I guess I didn't get to say it earlier, but like the schools that I was teaching at, mm-hmm. you know, those schools are kind of like closing right now. So, you know, I mean, I wish or hope that they all kind of come back and make a return. But as of right now, I'm also kind of grateful that I get to, you know, train at home and maybe even my yard, and I could be virtual and people will show up, you know?
Yeah.
I am planning a beach training.
It's interesting too. I mean, if you don't mind me asking though, like during the whole, it's been 6 months. Can you believe it?
Okay. Crazy.
Like over 6 months since we've all been in this pandemic, and you know, you guys were all okay during the whole protests, or do you guys join in, or you guys were out and about seeing any of that stuff?
I participated, man. I mean, not often, but I do. Like, again, a lot of that, some of that protest actually happened at my place of work at Mission High School. I came, I documented, I brought my camera. You know, I feel like I'm out there involved because I'm even volunteering in the food banks, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm being responsible with my engagement with folks, practicing distancing, you know, wearing my mask. But I feel like it's important for my kind of mental health to be somehow involved. I realize that that's my form of resistance against mentally, you know, for COVID.
So as you were saying about the protest,
being involved and just documenting and supporting, you know, there was that youth-led protest for George Floyd. You know, I participated in that because some of my students were participating. And I really just feel like it's really important to show up for young people right now because young people are also getting the brunt of all of this, and you know, and it's like, you know, and it's hard for them as well because they're like, you know,
they're not in schools right now. A lot of them are at home.
They're not in schools, you know, they're closed away from, they got their own distancing, so it's a lot of struggle. So I wanted to participate and support community events in the Black Lives Matter movement, in even in just protesting for racial injustice. You know, especially during these times, you know, because all of that came out to the front because, you know, you shelter in place, a lot of things are not happening, there's less sports, so there's less distractions. So when injustices are happening, then the people are less distracted, are more willing to participate in movements. And that's why I felt like there's a lot more changes happening, maybe more accelerating because a lot more people are involved, right? Mm-hmm. I've been out there involved, and even in a food bank that I help with the organization I volunteer with, Homies Empowerment in East Oakland, where they're every Tuesday they serve about 1,000 families, giving free food, toiletries, and masks to people in East Oakland, which is predominantly Latino and Black communities and Asian communities. You know, a lot of those folks lost their jobs. You know.
Yeah.
So I'm out there helping out, and Yeah, man. And I just feel like, you know, I told my family that I'll be responsible, but I felt like that was important for my mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, and also, and you know, like I get access to some of that free food, you know, like there was a time where I wasn't working, you know? Mm-hmm. So I needed to also, access stuff for our families. But overall, man, it just, I think the idea of helping others, being of service of others was a great medicine for a lot of the feelings that I was going through because of the shelter in place and the pandemic. And I was not liking it, you know? I was like feeling bad, I was feeling low, I was feeling mm-hmm. depressed, and like, you know, I'm not clinically depressed, and I don't wanna say that lightly because I know there's some people that are clinically depressed. But
I've talked about it on my show about depression with others, and it's really sad because I mean we are in a state where you can't, you know, like we always crack jokes about introverts and extroverts, but you know there are a lot, you know, like introverts might be doing okay, but there are a lot of extroverts that are getting, you know, that type of depression during this.
Very suffering, man, and
you feed energy off of people.
right, and some of them. Haven't had nothing to deal with this, you know. It's like all of a sudden you're taking them away from their life source, which is socializing, mm-hmm. you know. So that's kind of in itself also kind of traumatic, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're one of those people that like live on social media, right, where you blew up being famous because of whatever, and you know, you have all these people following you, great, but all of a sudden you don't have a lot of content to produce because you can't go out and travel these places or show whatever you're doing. It's just very local. So you kind of do lose fans and whatnot because they're not at home or at work, wherever they do to receive your content for those few minutes that they're not at work.
Right.
Right. It's like, how do you get that? How do you get somebody, like, how do you market stuff to people during COVID? Because, you know, like Amazon's doing great because everybody's just like searching stuff. But if you're trying to, you know, like communities and how do you get noticed?
Yeah, that's important. And I think it's really some of the more, you know, the ones that stay strong are usually the ones that adapt, you know, and pivot. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so some of the influencers that I like are adapting to where they're creating content. And adjusting, you know, and maybe it's not traveling, you know, maybe it's like doing something that's continuing to produce more content, but you're just kind of like doing it from your home. Maybe you're doing more some virtual things, you know.
Well, not just traveling, but you know, like recently you've been hearing in the news, like people are leaving California.
Right.
About that?
Yeah, yeah.
Your thoughts?
Hey, bye. I think there's a few things that happen. You know, there's a lot of negative things that happen because of COVID, but also a lot of positive things where it's like, you know, we understood now that some people could actually work virtually, you mm-hmm. know, and what that done is like, go home, you know, get that nice paycheck, go home. Like, because that's affected the gentrification in the communities in San Francisco and the Bay Area in general because mm-hmm. of what we have. All the tech industry, we got these young folks doing the tech work, getting a nice paycheck, raising up the rent. But if they could be somewhere else, and hey, why not decentralize certain things? And that's, you know, that's helpful. You know, there's less commute, there's mm-hmm. less carbon in the air. You know, there's a lot of other positive things that's happening. So I think there's, you know, yes, there's some benefits to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's just really now a matter of how can you adjust still? And I guess one of the questions that I've always understood from the influencers or the leaders in the social media is like, mm-hmm. how can you still bring value, right?
Yeah.
So if you could still bring value and if it's not in the same setting, then do so, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and I feel like I'm learning from that. We're like, okay, I don't have a martial arts school to teach at. Well, then, you know, I'm doing the virtual, right? And then, you know, I'm quarantining with Greg to create our online services, you know, our mm-hmm. online academy, right? So, you know, I think just there's this way, man. That's what we do as humans is as Filipinos and as Asians in general, like, we know how to adapt, you know, we kind of like adapt, and there's so many challenges we and our ancestors have gone through that, you know, adapting and assimilating has just been embedded in our DNA, you yeah. know? So I feel like, you know, sit back, watch, and see how we can adjust to what's been presented to us, you know, and hopefully it's not going to be forever.
Well, it's
hopefully.
Better than, you know, sit back and watch better than, you know, like stand back, like stand,
stand back and stand down. And
yeah, stand back and stand by. I was like, what?
Right. Oh, shit. Yeah, we're going to do that too, bro. Well, we definitely all stand by for each other. That's for sure.
So yeah, it's funny about the stand down and stand back, right? You know, it's funny because a lot of people don't know who the Proud Boys are, and I still don't know who they are really. But I think it's kind of funny that, you know, Trump mentioned all these weird things during the debates. I didn't know if you saw any of that.
I did actually. It was entertaining. I was cooking dinner. I would just wanted to see the shit show, and you know, and that's what I got. You know, and it's just, you know. It's just a reflection of America, really, you know, mm-hmm. like we, you know, our people, the American people, whether they voted on this person or mm-hmm. it was the electoral colleges or whatnot, you know, this is, you know, Trump is only an expression, an extension of, you know, what this country is about, you know, or what this thing is built mm-hmm. on. You know, I'm sure he has a lot of good intentions in terms of a business person who wants to make America a great business, you know, mm-hmm. but, you know, he's also come from a very privileged background and he doesn't really understand where.
Yeah, I can see why you say he's like out of touch with the common man.
Yeah, you know, and Joe is Sleepy Joe is what he's called, you know, the OG, the double OG. You know, he's not the sharpest, but, you know, he's compassionate, and he was a vice president of a first African-American president. So he is, it's kind of historic, you know, for mm-hmm. him. And I mean, right now in this election and where we're at, it's really just the polar extremes of what America is represents. You know, I watched it. I laughed. I cried internally. Mm-hmm. It was partly because of like, damn, this is what the world we live in, you know. But nothing surprised me because, you know, if you understand, you know, a true white allies, friends who are white, mm-hmm. are the ones who understand, you know, what white supremacy is and white privilege is and white fragility. The friends that I call that are white, who I call are my friends or ally, they know about all that, you know. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, not everybody's like that, whether they're white or they're a person of color that's a U.S. patriot in terms of under the guise of patriotism, under the guise of or patriarchy under the mm-hmm. guise of patriotism, you know. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't surprise me, though, because that's what there's a percentage of America that thinks like Donald and Trump, you know, and. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like two white guys fighting over stolen land.
I think that's kind of a bullshit thing. But it came down to, you know, Biden, because I think, you know, I followed a lot of the campaign guys earlier on. You know, there were a lot of interesting people that were running. And I guess for myself, it's interesting how at the end, a lot of people that didn't want these people ended up assuming power anyways. I think it's funny because no matter how you look at it, you know, it's like Biden's not that sharp, but it's also terrifying to know that if accidentally he croaks, Kamala Harris automatically becomes president. And I'm not saying a lot of people were all down for Kamala, you know, I'm not just a rag on her, but it is an interesting thing because not a lot of people were for her. And so I, you know, some people were for Elizabeth Warren or Bernie and it is really a weird kind of system because, you know, yeah, I believe in meritocracy. I believe in the idea that, you know, if you work hard, you deserve the position that you decided that you wanted to do. And hopefully America sees that. It is funny that when Biden said he was picking somebody, you know, he said he's going to pick a female. Then he added on another stipulation. So it's going to be a female of color. I'm like, it could have been any kind of female. I was up for any of the other women that were running on the ticket. But it's like, when he said that, he kind of like, you really cornered yourself into, you know, a couple of people. And I thought he was going to pick Stacey Abrams for a second, but.
Right.
But, you know, that.
That's too radical to everybody, you know, like Stacey, you know, I mean, part of my feeling why Obama got voted in is because of Biden, you know, it was like, if Obama came in there running with Hillary, a woman, or anybody else outside of the status quo of a white male, you know, which was dominated this country, then I don't think Obama would have had a chance. So for Biden, you know, it's purposeful in a way because that's technically his base, you know, like black people voted for Obama and Biden, you know, so but not a lot of folks of color. Doesn't mean they're going to just go with the flow with Joe, right?
Yeah, they're not just going to follow the establishment just for fuck's sake. I mean, we want to believe that our average, you know, American is a little smarter than that, and that they actually are choosing and picking. But I mean, at this point, you're kind of
not limited. The voting American.
the voting American.
Not the voting American. Like, there a lot. I would assume that the average American, especially if you live in the coast, you might be a little smarter. But unfortunately, the people, the Americans that vote are not the folks that are closer to looking like us, unfortunately, right? There are some, but, you know, we got people who are still immigrants, who come from a very traumatized background where even the idea of voting is scary because they either are illegal or their ancestors has been historically, you know, like as much as a lot of us want to believe in a system, there's a lot of people that still don't believe in a system and it's historic, you know, and it's like people have been bamboozled, you know, so not a lot of people want to, you know, vote or even participate, even though they might have a lot of opinion, right? So, yeah, man, I feel like he might have put himself in a corner, but I feel like it's also a good look for him, particularly if we are saying that majority of Americans are smarter, because it is, you know, like majority of voters are women, you know, and you know, and she she's an anomaly because she's a woman of color, but she's also a cop. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of want an enforcer to run with you. You know, if Joe is the soft, you know, then Kamala is the iron fist. You know what I mean? And they can't really hate on her too much because, you know, she was actually jailing motherfuckers, you know, even though she's a woman of color. So if you're looking at it from outside of a person of color, they're like, who is this woman of color? Oh, she's a fucking DA. You know, there's some anomaly to that. So again, I personally have been traumatized by systems, you know, and based on the research I've done in the past, from how Native Americans were treated with fucking to African Americans to you know, Mexicans, you know, like, I know America is the land of the free, and I know we want equality here, but from the lens of equity, it hasn't been fair, you know, it hasn't. So a lot of people are traumatized by the system, by the government, it's hard, man. People came out for Obama because 2008, people wanted change. He promised a lot, including environmental, you know, and then a lot of the promise wasn't kept, you know. So a lot of the people of color, a lot of the young people that voted, they didn't really feel like coming out.
They felt duped a little bit. They felt duped. Yeah. So like, why bother this time around?
Right. You know, well, we had a black president. It's cool. Why we got to vote again? Oh, and then this motherfucker came in.
Yeah, well, that was assuming that, not to hark, but it's like, how much can, not to knock on Obama, but it's like, how much, even for himself, it's like, how much can one black president do to bridge the gap between, of injustice and color and whatnot? And putting us together. And I think regardless, people need a vote. You need a vote. Everybody needs a vote. It's your civic duty. If you have the ability to vote, you should. I've oftenly said, it's like, America recognizes 193 countries. That's how many countries are on this fucking planet. That's all that we agree upon. Apparently the UN, looks at it like 250 something, 50. And we don't care about the other 60 because they're pretty much small and indigenous. But we do try to fight for what we can. But when you look at roughly 200 countries that are on this planet that we recognize, about 80 of them allow you to vote. And here in America, it's one of those that it's the land of the free to the degree that you get to vote. And it's better to be able to vote than not vote at all. That's my argument for it. You don't have to, but it's like, or whatever it is, but you think about it, like in the grand scheme of the world, how many places you get to do it? Yeah, about 80 places, but those places, they either tax you, charge you, make you take a day off, or they will fucking put you in prison if you don't vote, and it's required for all these other countries. And here it's like you get a right to waive it off, even though a lot of people have a general idea of the electoral college and some people don't have the idea of the electoral college.
Right.
But you have to hope that the representatives that are going to cast that vote for you, cast it correctly, because they're, it's funny how gerrymandering and all that other BS happens. And this year with COVID and how this mail-in ballot, I don't know if you got yours. I just got mine not too long ago. And
yeah, I'm lined up actually. Yeah. I did one already,
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's even funny because, the propositions that are coming out, and just going over these yes and no's are a little interesting. One of them that I'll straight up say I'm not a big fan of, but it's partially because I'm an ageist. I waited, and so will every 17-year-old kid wait until you turn 18 to get to vote. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that's one of those. As an adult, we all waited. I don't care whether people go, oh, well, we should be able to do this a year early. We all waited until we were 18. It's an arbitrary number. We know it. But the people that are living and that are already over 18 are going to vote no. I'm sorry.
Right.
that's one of those that I talked to a friend about, and I gotten some weird arguments in this debate with him about it. And I just, for me as a former teacher, I still would expect, the science shows that it's 18 and up, and I think we're okay with that. Everything's already been pushed to 21. So why are we trying to bring down the tier of numbers? We already allow you to drive at 16. What are you complaining about? You get to go outside. You get to go outside at 16. You don't get a credit card until you're 18, and all that other stuff. So why don't you just wait until then? I'm sorry. One more year is 365 days, unless if it's a leap year, you can wait a little longer that one year.
right. And some people are not even, that's not even in their radar, mm-hmm. They're just trying to get a license. And that's unfortunately, that's what we've kind of, that's what happened here in this United States. It's like, yes, we got the option to vote, but we don't really make it a priority to educate our people to vote, which means, so people are less likely to participate in it,
I'm just going to say, I'm going to say that again. That's Prop 18 also. No, vote no on Prop 18.
Oh, yeah. I remember that shit.
I was just saying, for the fans that are listening. It's like, if you're in California, vote no on Prop 18. I'm sorry, 17-year-old kids, but you can't be roughly, over 18.
You can wait another.
You can wait. We all did, I don't care whether you got, you're hella cool and you got to do it a little early, you've been doing it since 15 or whatever it is. Great for you. But not everybody's like that.
No.
Y'all can wait.
Yeah. But it's a good thing. It's a good idea. The more we insert that in the in our students' upbringing, you know, but like I didn't grow up like that for sure. Like I was in the hood, like nobody, even the adults in my neighborhood wasn't talking about voting, you know, everybody was talking about trying to survive. Right. And everybody was talking about, they're not going to do anything even if we vote, you know, like, so it's just like, that's the kind of, upbringing and environment that a lot of folks grew up in, you know. There's like not really that kind of trust in their government, you know. There's like, oh, we've been abandoned, who cares, right? So it's unfortunate, but that's how it is. But yeah, you're right, we gotta like get more people to be engaged. And you know, I thought that the debate was like a shit show, because it's like nothing, no one's like presidential. If you're presidential, you're close to regal, you're close to royalty. Like this idea of cutting people off, talking like kids, like exhibited by the president, you know, like to me, that was like, man, this is when you know that this dude is really a businessman. He like bullied his way for it. But, you know, I get it. That's how you close deals, you know, you close deals.
I think some of the people on the right look at it like when he's forceful that way, it's like, oh yeah, this guy's going to close the deal. Or this is how he talks to people, or does he? Or he's just like, you know, he's just like this on for camera sake.
Yeah, well, I would think we are, well, you know, then you kind of peel away the cameras and you're like, what would make a person behave like this? Well, usually when they're rich. Usually that, when they and have airbrushing. Power. Right, right. And yeah, when you have power, right? When you have power, you run the table. You talk, you cut people off, right? When you have the power, you can do that. So homeboy have had power all his life. So it's okay. He thought that it's okay for him.
And he thinks it's right. It's, you know, that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that believe might is right.
Right, right. So,
it's the way of the jungle for them.
Yeah. But have I ever seen a presidential debate where motherfuckers were cutting each other off like that? No, never. You know, usually it's like high class, very... very you know, like very classy, right? Classy, like I would remember. But you know, again, I saw it and I was like, oh, but I also again wasn't surprised. I was like, this right here, it's like Mayweather. It's like you know, like a lot of Filipino boxers, or a lot of boxers in general, or the fan, they hate Mayweather, right? But look what he's accomplished. He's like, okay, regardless, he's 50-0. He defeated hella people, and he
knocked out.
And he, you know, McGregor. He knocked out McGregor. He beat our person. Uh-huh. Right? He beat Manny Pacquiao.
That was a hard. That was a hard fight, because see that fight, and this is me coming up to the defense of Manny, and for a Chinese guy to say, I defend Manny. But I think the thing is, it's like, when you're fighting for money, you're not fighting for honor or pride. You're just fighting for money.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what it is, you know.
And that fight, it's like, Manny was trying to fight for honor, for like a title, and you know, some people are like, I'm just trying to do it for the pride, because I need that O number. Like, I'm never going to lose. I don't care how.
Yeah. And, you know, regardless if his shoulder was really injured, right? He lost it, right? Even if it was really injured, then hell yeah, he'd fucking defeat him. But the point is like, we over here talking shit about Mayweather. But he
Oh no, still product. Much respects to the guy. I mean, like, the guy is
right.
The guy knows how to work the system, and a great fighter works the system and plays it. You play your game no matter how people tell you do it.
You know, and he's the product of American capitalism, you know? Like, that's what America's about. It's about us and finding our picket fence and living our life, you know, like being economically like finding a way.
But I agree with you. And I think it's just, we all love a Rocky story. We all love this underdog that fights. He has his ups and downs. And, you know, Manny's had that. And, you know, when you come across Mayweather, and much respect to the guy, but it's not, his story in itself is a little, is different from other stories. It just doesn't fall under the narrative of It doesn't have all the hero's trials. That's what no. I'm looking at. It doesn't have all the trials of what makes a hero. But like you have all the stuff of like he has all like he's a good fighter. He has all the knows the timing, knows how to wait it out. He has all that stuff. It's just that you don't have that like you don't have those. It's like Goku has when you think of Goku and you think of all the great fighters he's had. He has that Frieza. He has that Cell. He has that. You know, he always has that one, those rivals, you know, those great rivals. And it's kind of hard when you look at Mayweather. It's like, who were his rivals? It's just kind of like that. That's all.
Yeah. His story is definitely different. But he did it smart, right? He mm-hmm. got to beat the guys that he could beat, right? And then he did it smart. He waited some out to win. Either they were too young, like Canelo, you know, mm-hmm. or they're too old, you know, like Manny. Or,
well, that's the thing. It's like that fight up the mountainside, right? Some people's paths going up the mountain are easy. Some people's paths are a little rough on the terrain.
A little different, yeah. Well, Manny's is definitely rough, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, Mayweather's is too, because, like, we grew up and straight up, you know, dad, like, fucking going to jail. So he has his struggles in a different mm-hmm. way, right? Yeah. And then, but he goes on his journey to beat the game, right? And mm-hmm. and I kind of see that with Trump's story, you know.
Don't deviate from the thing.
Yeah, but he definitely has got a silver spoon, right? Mm-hmm. But I guess my point was like both Mayweather and both Trump are just really a product of capitalism, right? Mm. A product of what this country is partly about, you know? So I look at him and his politics and I'm like, wow, he's for the business. But sometimes when you make a business move, you don't really give a fuck about the people, right? So that's how I felt about watching the debate. I wasn't surprised, you know? I was like, you know, like, there's part of me that believe in the system, but there's a lot of part of me that I feel like the system is broken, you know? And mm-hmm. I think it's okay to still vote and still believe that, you know? Like,
exactly.
The shit is broken, man. Like, I know it. I seen it. We put a capital over people. We put resources over sustainability, you know? And we let the market take care of itself, but the market might not look after the well-being of the planet and the people. Right. So there's a lot of imbalances in the system. But, you know, we as a nation choose to believe that we can do this. Right. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's part of me that still feel like, all right, you know, we got this. The people are going to come through, you know, but there's part of me that I'm like, man, you know, mm-hmm. someone's going to hack something.
Yeah.
You know? So I mean, when I found out that when they even in the news came out that he had COVID, uh-huh. you know, I was like, he could, and I wish him the best. I hope he doesn't die. However, and some people are like, hope he dies, and that's whatever, you know, to each his own. But at the same time, I'm like, well, that could also be a ploy, you know, that could also be part of the game for him, you mm-hmm. know. So just watch out. Just be careful. You know, what's the word? Just be vigilant.
Be
you know,
vigilant.
Stay woke. I mean, stay aware, I guess. Oh. Yeah, so that's how I felt about watching the debate and where we were going.
No, you know, I think that's kind of sad because this debate, the first debate that, you know, we only have one. We have one debate so far, and that's it. And, you know, past we've had a few more. And it kind of it just really burns because it's like you don't really get to hear what the policies are. You don't really get to hear, you know, what are your plans that you're going to follow at this point, because everybody was just trying to talk over each other. And, you know, the only enemy for that debate was Trump. Trump was the only enemy to himself. And it was just it's sad that he couldn't shut up on his own terms to hear what he had to say. There were a couple of funny moments that I can't believe he said it, but he said it anyway.
Oh my God. I was laughing, Bled. I was like,
don't you ever say smart. Don't you ever use the word smart in front of me.
I was telling my partner, I was like, if Trump's gonna win, is because of this. It's like, he's funny. He's like, he's funny on the mic. You know, I was like laughing at what he was saying. I was like, this motherfucker does.
When he said smart, that, and he went in with that little thing, I'm like, I'm not gonna lie, as a comedian of any sorts, everybody had to find that part funny. It was like, oh, man. Smart. And I'm like, wow, he's gonna start giving us, he's gonna lecture Biden about smart for a second. That's gonna be fun. This is funny.
Oh man.
But I was not prepared for that.
Yeah, I thought it was funny as fuck, man.
Don't you ever use that word in front of me. Smart, you don't even know what college you went to. And I sat here going like, okay, I don't even know what college he went to, so I don't even know what kind of jab that was. Because that was like a personal jab, and I'm gonna say, like, you know, the people that know where, you know, Biden went for college, great, but other people would be like, it's over their head.
Yeah, no, this shit is, it was like seeing, like, in high school, when I was going to high school, at Oakland High School, there would be clown sessions, capping sessions, when two kids would straight up, oh, your mama's so fat, man, your mama's, and it was like that, bro, and that's what it took me back to. I was like, wow, it's a cap session. He's like, yeah. Smart, what are you calling smart? You know, oh, your son, like, oh, damn, like, this fool was digging low. So, anyway, I was like, that's not very presidential. And I was like,
of course it wasn't presidential, but you're like, I wanted to start hearing, like, go fat mama jokes. Yo mama's, oh, man, so fat, and I wanted to see him just do it.
I was ready to sample everything. I was like, well, especially when he's talking about, like, look at what happened to Oakland. You know, I think someone already did a meme, video meme, that when he, like, said, look what happened to Oakland, there was, like, sideshows of videos of people in Oakland. But, you know, it's just hilarious, like, you know, even this idea of the two party, you know, like, to me, I'm kind of over the two party thing. It's like, all right, you know, I just need somebody who's gonna do this shit right, you know. But yeah, I tend to not to,
I just need you to work. I don't care, right. on Thanksgiving, work. Christmas, exactly. Work, you're working on Christmas Day for the peoples. You know, like, you're like, you become president, you're giving up four holidays, all four holidays for 4 years. That's it. All the holidays. Not that bad. It's just four of them. It's not that bad. You know, every Christmas, New Year's, you're working, you know, people are like, Mr. President. I'm like, no, I'm working hard for the people. I don't care who it is, man or female. I'm just saying, that's how we know you're working hard for us. It would be
fucking, that's all.
I would love for, like, you know, the president to walk down trying to shake people's hand and then pick up trash on the same time. Like, we're cleaning up this fucking city since I'm here.
Yo, yes, yes. You know, they're, yeah, they'll, but they won't have those kind of presidents. You know, they'll try to assassinate them.
fast.
You know, JFK was probably someone that's closest. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well, speaking of the random fights and stuff like that, I mean, things looking forward to. Have you seen, like, Mike Tyson's, like, last stuff or heard about anything about him?
Yeah, I heard. I mean, two fights I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, and, you know, the recent, it's not fully contracted yet. Mm-hmm. But Pacquiao is going to go with McGregor. So McGregor is Pacquiao. So I'm looking for that. But the Tyson,
Manny's going to give him a fight too?
Yeah, I mean, it makes complete financial sense. You know what I mean? Like, one is, like, you know, again, I'm protective of Manny now. I wasn't at first. I felt like, yeah, you got to prove to everybody. But now, like, fuck trying to prove it. He doesn't need to prove anything. You got eight division, you know, maybe even seven. No one has ever done that.
Yeah.
You know, you come in from 108 to 147 with all the belts, like, you know, you don't have the pretty record like Mayweather. That's fine. But, you know, he's fucking defeating 30-year-old undefeated people. You know, like,
you're still one of the greatest, period.
Man, if he was American, if he was white or black, he would have got the fight of the decade the second time, right?
Yeah.
But because he's not American, he doesn't, you know, like, you're Asian, bro. You don't. Especially, you're an athlete, you're an anomaly if you are a fucking Asian athlete dominating the game. You know, like, no one really, you know, because especially the way Asian men been perceived as weak.
You gotta come off like a Bruce Lee, Donnie Yen.
You know, Jet, you gotta Lee. Be either.
You gotta, like, persevere extra, among all that.
it's either you got, and if you're Asian in the in the mainstream media, you got to be either two polar opposites, right? You got to be the Chinese food delivery guy who's a nerd that gets no action, or you get to be the hyper masculine kicking down boards and kicking things down, which also don't get a girl. Either way, you don't never really get.
Damn it, Jackie, I blame you.
I mean, but see, the thing about Jackie, at least he made it playful, right? He kind of like, you know, so it's really important for Manny to be at the place where he's at in his 40s, still in the top five, holding all the division, historically the oldest welterweight. Historically, the only.
So, how many pounds off would he be from like McGregor? That's news to me now at this point. Like, how many pounds?
That's probably a good, you know,
10 pounds, 15.
They'll meet between 135 to 145. You know, but he can't go anywhere too high. You know, so I think that's a good fight for him because the other young dudes, you know, whether it's Spence or. The dude at Top Rank. These are all fucking young lions, man. These are undefeated cats in their 30s. And they all want, all of them, all these guys want to beat Cerrone because he's the cash cow after Mayweather. And everybody feel like they could defeat him because he's older. But he just put down motherfucking Thurman. You know, he won that fight. You know, like, so here is a 42-year-old Filipino man beating 30, cats in their 30s and their primes, undefeated with zeros in their record, defeats, right? So that I'm looking forward to that. I want him to be protected. He doesn't need to fight he probably got two more fights in his lifetime.
And you think he's got two more in him?
Yeah, we would never see another Manny Pacquiao in our lifetime. You and I will probably be great-grandfathers if we make it that long.
Nostalgia to see somebody else. Of that. Yeah.
Yeah, bro, like, you know, like suck this in because we will never ever see this again. And when he leaves the sport, everybody's going to realize how special he was, you know? So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward obviously to Mike Tyson. Part of it is like just Mike Tyson is his history, you know, us watching him and when he was a young fighter, but also like I'm especially attached to this because, you know, Mike Tyson has been on his vegan stage right now. And he's kind of like a fucking machine right now. It's being recovering, fighting, and him being like, you know, talking about really being advocating for why he's in his shape. Part of the working out is his diet. So I'm excited to see him, you know, and just his story is just, so I can't wait to see that fight. I wouldn't take Joy Jones for granted though, because that fool is a champ. And yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. You know, but those are two great legends, man. I just pray that they don't shake their brains and they get injured, you know. But I just like, I mean, fighting is like entertainment for me.
I just hope that the ref steps in before the, you know, like, you know, they hit so hard that you kill him, you know?
yeah.
Like, I want to see you knock him out, but I don't want to see you knock him out and then, like, teeth are flying out over there. Like, oh, you know, I don't want that.
No, Mike is a lot more different now. He's, like, a super compassionate dude. He comes out, but he's still a beast, you know? And I love to see it, man.
I heard him on Joe Rogan when he talked about, you know, coming back. And he said he had a couple other fights lined up after this, but he didn't say exactly what kind of fights. But,
yeah.
You know it's, what? It's weird when he says, it's like, I just want to hit somebody.
It's great, man. I mean, especially with Pacquiao still in the game. Like, Pacquiao being in the game has awakened a lot of people, a lot of athletes in their retirement. You know, black athletes was like, wait a minute. This little Asian dude still fighting at 40 and whipping fools? Wait. I need to make a comeback, you know, like, so, you know, he's inspiring, but not just him, obviously, but, you know, I think I'm all about it, man. I think warriorship, you know, is
well, I mean, like, you have like American Ninja Warrior, you have like 50, 60 year old dudes doing these things, you know, they're ripped and shit, right? Like Anthony Bourdain and.
Right.
I don't know. I hope I'm ripped like that at 50. Kind of,
yeah. But those kind of sporting events are different from a combat sport. You know, there's some, there's nothing else than someone else across from you saying, I'm going to try to take your head off if you don't try to take my head off.
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's nothing else than that. You know, and that's why combat sport is just, it's just crazy, man. It's like super savage and super brute. But at the same time, you know, the ones that do it for the art and for the science, it's really beautiful, man. But it's just, but it's such a dangerous and, you know, sporting activity, you know, like anyone could jump off a obstacle course, you know, and, you know, but someone just saying, yo, give me your 100% right now. And we're just going to go and squab, man. That's, there's nothing else like that. I can't do it. I can't step in the ring like that. Mm-mm. You know, I'll do my martial arts with my weapons, but that's it. You're stepping in the ring with someone.
No, thank you.
I give them all the props. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
I mean, like that comes right up in December though. So I'm kind of a little stoked about it.
Yeah. And I think that's
like November, December.
Pacquiao's fight is also winter. Yeah. Hmm. Those are all winter fights. So that'd be great, man.
And that'll then, be right after that, the election. So, you know, that's the only thing to look forward to that after that week.
Yeah. We need something to look forward to.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, you know, that's kind of the thing. We're going to see where that's going to go and, you know, how this economy is going to open up by next year. Because, you know, are we in a second wave now, or we're going to ultimately move into a third wave?
Right. Right.
We just finished up that last quarter. You know, this is fall.
Yeah, we got to feel it out, you know.
And, you know, the smoke has been, you know, it's sad that, you know, like it's so normal now in California where like, oh, yeah, there's a fire.
Well, that's why we got to go bring back the indigenous ways, how Native Americans would do small fires, controlled fires.
Yeah, controlled fires,
like,
yeah.
What happened is like when the feds took over the fucking Native lands and the cook kicked in Native people and how to steward the land in its original way, you know? And it's like when you take the original people out of the context of how the land was taken care of, then of course we're going to have shit like this. So this is really just an extension of white supremacy in our forest lands. So, you know, we want to go and allow our indigenous brethren who steward the land practice back these indigenous ways. So then we won't have this shit every year.
Oh, well, I hope they figure it out soon because, you know, we're all losing it here because, yeah, it's nice to have a home, but all of a sudden come home and not have it there anymore, right?
Yeah, bro. It's not cool, right?
Well, let's finish up with our review at this point. Let's go down with the things we like, things we dislike by starting off with things we dislike. Do you wanted to mention up something that you know during this whole pandemic, like one of your major dislikes? What grinds your gears?
I think one of the major dislikes is just like the ability to hug people, you know? I think touch and affection is just a great part of being human, and taking that away from humans and particularly young people to touch, to be affectionate and not be gross, it's you know, that fucking sucks. You know, we have a lot of, particularly, you know, me working with youth and kids, a lot of kids need affection, you know, and also our elders, the adults. So, you know, I think that's probably taking us away from our families is probably one of the things that grind my gears about this shit. But it also heightened up communication, you know, and all that. And I think anxiety, people's anxiety and fear, you know, that's the part that I kind of dislike about the fear part of this, the shaming, the shaming of people. If you go outside during COVID, even if you have a mask on and your space is between people, like, people start shaming each other, you know, and I think it's becoming way too extreme. Like, you know, what about the ability to believe in people's to have common sense, you know? But I get it, you know, what we're going through. But the fear factor is something that I dislike about these kind of situations on the planet and on society.
Well, so that's especially on the local level, it amps everything up. When you're trying to, when you're shaming somebody, and half the time I catch the shaming is it's through the, you know, you're passing by an aisle with somebody.
Right, right. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, you know, so
it's not 6 feet wide.
Right, it's 6 feet long, but the width ain't 6 feet. Right, yeah. Like the length is, but again, there's like, you know. People are aware. People know what's up.
Some people are still very cautious about that. And that's just, that's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. Like, you're doing every way to prevent, to survive the zombie apocalypse, but still.
Right. And that's, I'm all about that. I'm all about that. And I support that. It's just, don't the zombie apocalypse. and don't go like shaming people and blasting them. And, you know, when we are not all doing similar things ourselves, you know. So yeah, that's one of the things that grind my gears, you know, not being able to see family, the fear factor concept, you know, but I get it. We gotta be protection, you know, protected. So that's probably one of the things I dislike for sure.
I guess one of my dislikes this coming week was just the absent-mindedness of people coming back out and doing stuff later in the day because of the smoke was bad. The wrong people were out. That's just what grinds my gears. It's just, you look around, it's like all the right people that are doing their job, good for you guys. You guys keep doing you. But you just look around, you're like, it's all the wrong people that are out. And this is like, okay, you guys are going to be the cause of something. And it's just the filth, the trash. You know, there's just people dumping stuff left and right. And I don't know what's going on. It's like, why is there so much fucking trash during this time of pandemic? What are you people doing? But hey, I don't know what they're doing. I don't. I'm just, that grinds my gears, but it's just like a lot of like what you shouldn't be doing, you're just doing it anyways. And it's just, it's outlandish.
Yeah. I mean, people are trying to find a way to socialize, you know? So they're like, oh, okay, shelters in place, the clubs are out, the gyms are closed. Like, what else is there? So they're finding ways to deal with it mentally. But because we've been conditioned as people to be wasteful and live a lifestyle that's not sustainable, we're still producing hella waste. You know, we're still doing all this other shit. So it's really about a systematic change from within that I feel that we need to do as a society. You know, it's got to be like, we got to find things for people to do that's safe, you know, and that should be supported by society, you know, by governments. You know, so again, you know, as much as I want to point fingers at people, I point the finger at myself first. I point the finger at society, at our way of living, because we've been kind of living this way that's really been unsustainable. And honestly, if there's one thing that the pandemic has done, then there's a positive thing. It's to slow down some of our unsustainable way of living, man. It's really fucked up. It's not aligned with the planet, you know. Not to sound like a hippie, but that's who I am. Shit.
So, no, yeah. I get it though. And you have another dislike?
Let's see. That's it. I mean, the politics, I dislike it in general.
Yeah.
You know, just like the divide of things and the idea, it's taken away from this idea of unity. And I thought that's what we're all supposed to be about. So those are it, you know. Other than that, man, I wish the fucking gyms were open and the clubs were open. But then part of that is just like, I'll be in the clubs. I just probably have a beer looking at chicks and hanging out with my friends. I could be shooting videos, editing shit, doing something that's productive and artistic. So, you know,
It's just working in groups. Like when you work with, you know, you work with a good amount of people, you know, working with your team, it's just hard to be working from remote sometimes. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of greatness about being working out, you know, working at home or working out at home from, you know, a business standpoint, you know, but you do miss a little of the camaraderie of looking over your computer and saying, hey, Joe, what the fuck you doing, man? Get back to work.
Yeah. I'm
fucking with you, bro. Yeah. Fuck with you. You know, like, what the fuck were you doing? You talking, what's going on? What happened over there? Like, oh, no shit. there's that basic camaraderie that you have with some people at work. And it's weird because if you lost your job, not only did you lose your job, you lost a lot of like the relationships of whoever you normally hang out with at work. It is. Totally. When you're at work, it's like, dude, you spend lots of times with these people. Not that, it's like siblings that you don't want, but you just get them anyways.
Yeah, man. And that's, so that's what we are. We're social beings, So that's definitely one thing that I miss. Yeah, I definitely miss that part.
Well, and one of my biggest dislikes is like, when it comes to martial arts, Eskrima, or even like Chinese martial arts, Wing Chun, and all the things that you do practice, you get to practice with people in BJJ.
Right.
It's like, miss that. Like, just doing a drill with a friend. It doesn't matter whether you're sprawling or whatever. It's great that you can do it with, somebody that comes over and you guys, know that you guys are both quarantined, but it's different from doing a drill with a bunch of people in class because you get to practice with many people in one day.
And I agree.
Just training with your bro and stuff, it's great when you see them every now and then, but then it's like,
I know.
But it all, it's like, it's great to practice and train in certain ways, but then there's also like, everybody knows, it's like the more you random people you train with, you do build a different type of sensitivity it's a different type of dance, I guess. Everybody dances, man, it's just different songs. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Greg, but I'm kind of fucking tired of this motherfucker. Like, I know how he breathes. I know everything. I know all his patterns, And it's like, what you just said is really important. It's the more engagement you have with various speed and timing and people and personality, the more well-rounded you become, right? So, yeah, man, I love Gregory, but I'm like, God damn it, I want to post another video with someone else, like.
it's what Bruce always talked about as a practitioner of JKD. It's the broken rhythm. Yeah, everybody's got one, but that rhythm is broken differently for other people.
Yeah, yes. You got to feel that rhythm to break it. So, yeah, that's definitely, I missed that about training.
You can don't get me wrong, you get to do everything else, but in the idea of martial arts, there's the absence of those of a few of those things. I mean, and you can find ways to get it, but it's still nothing beats just, hey bro, my name's James, what's up, let's do this. All right, next human. Person
yeah, next person. Bro, it's nothing like it.
Quick shake, okay, good. Thanks for showing me that technique. Cool. I'm gonna go with the next guy now to my left.
I'm gonna rotate.
Yeah, rotate.
right.
Man, that guy. Oh man, he just laid on top of me the whole time. I couldn't do anything.
I won't rotate with him. I'm rotating another way.
I'm going the other way. Not right. Coming back. I'm avoiding this guy.
Yeah. See, that's the benefits of that shit.
So that's one of my major takeaways, just like, it's great to see some old homies and stuff like that, because you trust them, and it's like, hey, look, it's great, like, to work with a brother always is the great to test out a technique, because they're not going to do something stupid to you while you're trying to test this technique out. That's great about brothers. You get to show a technique and they let you finish and complete the technique, knowing that you're not trying to hurt them in any way. That's what Tap Out was for.
Yeah.
But anyways, something you liked during this time period as we wrap up?
Something I like about during this time, you mean?
Yeah, I mean like all the projects, something.
Or in general.
A fond memory of.
I mean, right now I'm, I'm really, you're right, I like the, being able to be kind of like sheltered in place and work from home, it's making me look at the mirror a little bit and kind of like, I want to work on my shit, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what I do appreciate about this time, is it's making me look and kind of start to prioritize where, earlier you can just, I'm going to go see this thing. Because, it's easy to be distracted and run away from, things that you really need to do, right? Mm-hmm. For things that you want to do. So I guess for me, something that I do like is, one is, I like the idea of not having to commute all the time. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of being spending a little bit more time with certain family members because of being sheltered in place. Not all the time, but you know, a lot more now because it's like, I get to spend more time.
It's that word of I get to be there a little bit for them.
Yeah. You know, so that's cool. But I like the idea of, you know, like self-reflecting, because the situation with COVID, you're like, man, what's really important in my life right now? You know, for one way or another, everybody kind of like looked in the mirror and was like, okay, what's the most important? You know, I miss all this shit that's going, like, what do I need to take care of? You know, and for the most part, people are like my family or my health. And then all of those ran across my mind. But then I was like, I need to fucking finish my projects. I need to go finish this online school. I got another project with my brother JR with launching pushing the Filipino and the vegetarian, the vegan community and movement a little bit more. Cause you know, we also play a space in that community.
Where is this place located at? If you want to.
Well, I don't, you know, me and my family, you know, JR, my brother, since high school with Gregory, he, as a high school project, he actually started No Worries Filipino Vegetarian Cuisine that became a catering company that became a restaurant. You know, I've been with him all this whole side. Greg actually helped him create that business plan when they were both in Oakland High School, right? I was already a practitioner in the diet, but I've been like super involved outside of the Filipino community, outside the martial arts community. I've been involved in the food justice community with the plant-based movements. Okay. Hold on. Sorry about that.
You put yourself on mic.
Oh, sorry. I've been participating in the plant-based community. So just, I want to get more involved in there and also have that project facilitating educational food justice work within my community. So those are the kind of things that's coming about, you know, and even just my locking down my business and just kind of honing down on my business. You know, I work, I just got a new job at the Berkeley Forest School, which is a good thing because I'm outdoor with kids. But at the same time, I want to kind of refine my own personal like business ventures, you know, and my passion projects. I like the Martial Arts Academy online and like the plant-based, the vegan stuff that I'm doing. So yeah, those are the things that are like,
where can they find your online classes at this point?
The martial arts, actually, me and Greg is creating a downloadable series. We don't have a domain yet for that. But I started my Patreon account to teach martial arts because I've been doing it with teaching meditation and mindfulness to kids, integrating it into bullying and with the kids, but also teaching adults. So I've been doing that. I got some packages at the Patreon account, which is patreon.com/jjasper, which is my first name, middle name. So that's like my martial arts Patreon account, because I haven't, again.
I'll make sure I put that down on the bottom of the link for that.
Oh, that'd be awesome, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just kind of like launching my stuff, and I don't even have my own website yet for that. So
we're gonna get you all up and ready this week before we post this all up.
Oh man, I appreciate it. So I was like, you know what? At the least, let me get the Patreon account up. So
yeah,
that's my access. That's how people can access me with the martial arts. Otherwise, I run the Visayan Eskrima Instagram.
I'll put all those links for everybody to follow you up under there.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So those are my two places right now. The next platform I'm building is my plant-based stuff. I don't have a domain yet, but you know, I have this alternative name, plant-based partners at Instagram. So I'm doing my
as soon as you get that back up, we'll get you back on the show. I want to hear about what's going on with that.
Yeah, man, just trying to integrate that and, you know, integrate fitness and health and martial arts, and hopefully later I could bring them all together as one brand. Right now I'm just kind of launching them as separate things, but maybe there'll be a time where people will actually follow me and be like, oh, okay, you're a brand. You could bring all those things together, you know. But just right now, I'm like, I'm such a newbie in the internet world game. And also, I don't want to look like a sleazy salesman. So I'm just kind of like allowing my passion to do the work for me. And then later on, when I do establish my courses and my products and services, at least I'm not just some guy who's like coming in to sell things rather than someone who's actually living it.
Exactly. All right. Well, you want to take us home at this point? You want to do your shout out?
Yeah. I don't really know what to do. I just really want to just say thank you so much for allowing me to be part of your show. You know, shout out to Guru Gregory. Him and I have this martial arts online downloadable series that we'll be launching soon. We don't have a domain, but they can reach us at Visayan Eskrima at Instagram. They can reach me personally at my martial arts Patreon account at patreon.com, J Jasper. And then, yeah, and then...
there's the Facebook page also, right?
Yeah, the Facebook page.
Yeah, so those are, yeah, you can also be reached at that as well.
Yeah, the Visayan style, Corto Cadena, Larga Mano Eskrima, very long name, but, you know, that's our flavor. And so those are the things that where I could be reached. And then pretty soon, launching, no, not pretty soon, ongoing, always promoting and cultivating a plant-based vegan community. And, you know, they can access me just through my personal account. But pretty soon I'll be launching something for that. But yeah, those are it, man. I wish I had all my marketing ready to go. Right now, I'm still kind of in the baby steps because I've been doing all the work. It's just now I got to be like, oh, let me put the marketing part up so people could actually find us and access us.
I was just told to do martial arts. I didn't know I had to learn how to do marketing too.
Exactly. Again, thank you so much for having me on the show, James. I appreciate you inviting me and allowing me to tell my story, and I'm super looking forward to hearing more about of your show. And thank you so much for listening to Atomic Zero.